Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Paymar, and you are listening to The Big Shift, the podcast that looks at the challenges our world, our economy, our politics, and our environment confront. Today, we're delving into the world of communications and the critical role it plays in our lives, particularly in managing and working in business. Robert Kent, the former dean of the Harvard Business School, said, "In business, communications is everything." And there's no one better to explain that than Bill McGowan. He's the founder and CEO of Clarity Media Group, based in New York. Bill has trained hundreds of high-level executives at Fortune 500 companies. He's also the author of Pitch Perfect, How to Say It Right the First Time, Every Time. Bill, welcome to The Big Shift. Glad you could make the time.
Jim, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for the invite.
First, full disclosure, Bill, you and I have known each other for decades from our days as anchors and correspondents at the major TV networks.
Long time.
Television stations in New York City. We've also worked closely in the communications consulting field. A long history, Bill.
Long. We go way back, Jim. And I know that a lot of what I probably will share today, you also know instinctively. So I already know you're going to ask me some questions for which you already know the answer.
Well, we'll have a good conversation and hopefully some people will learn from it. And I'd like to start off because, you know, you've trained a lot of really high level people, and the women and men who run America's businesses today, when they go into a meeting, you know, whether it be that early morning staff meeting, or they give a speech, or they give an interview with the print or broadcast press, in your view, what makes for a great presentation?
Saying something sticky that rattles around in people's brains for a few hours, a few days, or longer is one of the most important things in communication. There's all this emphasis, Jim, as you and I both know, on everybody being messaged. Right. And that's been the buzzword for a long time. Oh, she's good, so good on staying on message. And yeah, there's no question that sticking to the game plan is really important. But sometimes I think executives put all their emphasis on that and neglect saying something that really sticks with people. And so I think being memorable actually eclipses being messaged. You and I have both heard a lot of people message that are incredibly dull and forgettable.
Too many.
Too many. And so messaged is great, but it only gets you so far. And if you think about all the people that you've heard speak over the years that you remember what they've said, it's usually something pithy, punchy, concise, relatable, visual. And I don't think enough executives pay attention to the importance of saying something memorable.
Well, I think the word sticky, something that really just resonates when you hear it, it sticks in your mind. And when you leave that presentation, you remember it. And I'm just wondering, you know, how do you prepare if you're a business person and you've got a presentation you've got to give? Any tips, advice, techniques, methodology that you would suggest in terms of preparation?
A good starting point is not what typically is the beginning of most corporate presentations. Most people get up and go through the table of contents or the agenda. And I realize culturally in a lot of companies, that's important. But I guarantee you, no one listening to us right now has ever bought a book in a bookstore and brought it home and thought, wow, I can't wait to rip into that table of contents. You know, I can't wait to read that. And that's what an agenda slide is the equivalent of in the corporate world. It is a table of contents. It gets your presentation not off to a forgettable start, but one that resembles just about every other presentation you've heard. And to me, the problem is this numbing sameness that exists across all business presentations. They look, sound, and feel very similar to one another. So whatever you can do to break that mold is good. One way to go about it is to think, what's a story I can tell right from the beginning where maybe there is a metaphorical payoff to the story? The punchline has some kind of metaphorical tie to the main thing that I want to talk about in this presentation. And so, for instance, years ago, I used to give this presentation where the opening story I told was about this CEO who was trying to explain that his IPO underperformed because he and his fellow leaders couldn't come up with a narrative that fit on the back of a cocktail napkin. And I heard that interview on the radio and I thought, wow, that's actually a really great story to tell the next time I have to give a presentation, because I can use that cocktail napkin as a visual for how important it is to be concise. And so that metaphorical visual of the cocktail napkin was something that you could sort of weave in and out every once in a while in the presentation, and then maybe bring it back at the end and reference it. So it feels like it has a beginning, middle, and end to it.
Right. You know, that's a concept that you stress in your book, is this developing solid communications for business people, whether actors, sports stars, anyone. It's storytelling, Bill, right? It's and why is telling a story so important?
Well, let me give you, Jim, a choice. You could place yourself in two settings, and I want you to pick which you prefer to be in. You could be in a college university lecture hall, or you could be sitting around a campfire.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anybody who would probably pick the lecture hall who's listening to us right now. And it's because human beings from the very beginning of time, since they were drawing on the walls of caves, have been telling stories. And I think it's because we as listeners inject ourselves vicariously into the story. So there's that engagement factor, which is important. And we all just perform very differently when we're telling stories as opposed to delivering corporate messages. If you can find a way to fold in the corporate message within a story, there are a lot of studies that show that you get exponentially more engagement and retention when you do that. So the storytelling is hugely important. And what always fascinates me is there are no shortage of books on the market that urge the importance of storytelling. And yet when we go out there and we deal with executives, a tiny fraction of them do it, despite all the urging for a long time now about how important storytelling is.
Ingratiating yourself with the audience too, I think, is important. Like right from the get-go, grab them by the throat, make them listen to you, make them pay attention, make them stand up. And another thing that you stress in your book is simplicity and the importance of simplicity. Not getting, you know, having a common denominator language that everyone understands so that you don't leave anyone behind. So simplicity really is an essential, isn't it?
If you want everybody to stay with you, it is. And the problem is there came a point where I think the average corporate person looked at lawyers and doctors who have very specific vocabularies to their professions. And I think they had jargon envy. I think they looked at doctors and lawyers as having this special secret language that they were able to speak in their profession. So corporate people just made one up of their own. And all this mission critical and consumer centric and all this nonsense that gets tossed around. And if you look at the greatest minds throughout history, Da Vinci, Einstein, Mark Twain, Steve Jobs, every single one of those people were on a relentless pursuit of simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
true.
Yeah, you know, Da Vinci had a quote that simplicity is the ultimate form of sophistication.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think one of the criticisms of Apple in the post-Steve Jobs era is that one of the things everybody loved about the products and the messaging around the products was the simplicity and the intuitive nature of it. That's been lost a little bit.
It sure has. You know, you've been consulting and training business executives at the highest levels for, I think, what, 22 years mm-hmm. now, something
yeah,
like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, CEOs from Facebook, I guess it's Meta now, Airbnb, right. Spotify, Calvin Klein, Whole Foods, the commissioner of the NFL.
Yeah.
What do you find is the biggest issue or maybe the deficiency that most executives face? And they lead huge companies, but they're not such great communicators.
Mm-hmm. Well, this does not apply to everyone on that list you just
no,
gave.
Of course not.
A couple of them are exceedingly good.
Uh-huh.
Often what I find is that there is a lack of investment in the time to get better. And I just finished a big project with one company in the streaming world, and they really did it right. They made sure every single executive had, you know, 3, 4, 5 realistic rehearsals of this fairly big event they had. And there are no shortcuts. You've got to put in the time. And I feel for chief communication officers in all these companies, because they beg and plead the chief executives to put in the time to rehearse. Oh, I got this. You know, I've done it before. I've got it. And then they get on stage and they don't.
Right.
So it's very hard to convince them. Listen, I know you've done 500 keynotes in your life, but this is number 501 and it's different, and you can't get up in there and just wing it.
Well, I remember Steve Jobs from Apple, when he was still with us, used to go to the tech shows, and he would spend all day practicing.
All day.
I mean, it was amazing. He just, you know, he wanted to get it right. He knew the importance of that presentation, putting that out to the media. That's how he sold product. You
exactly.
know, besides the fact that it was a beautiful product and it did a million things that we, I mean, how do we live without it today? I'd rather lose my wallet than my iPhone.
Yeah, right. Because you know, if you lose your iPhone, you are losing your wallet too.
the thing
about Jobs is that all that repetition not only allowed him to know every move backwards and forwards, it also allowed him to keep boiling it down and boiling it down and boiling it down to its most simplistic core. And if you think about those lines, you remember 10,000 songs in your pocket,
right?
You know, which was the line the day he introduced the iPod. And that's just a memorable line.
Yep.
And I'm sure it took a while to get to that.
That memorable line, that is one of the more difficult things to come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Even going back into our news days, you know, right. Coming up with that opening line to that story so that you grab the audience. You know, a savvy investor, Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, net worth a mere $108 billion, the fifth wealthiest person in the world, said by honing your communication skills, you'll become worth 50% more than you are now. Do you think that that's just hyperbole, or do you think communications is really that important in business?
I do think it's that important, because through your communication skills, you can achieve two very important things in business. You can persuade and influence. And the majority of people who we work with are trying to persuade a prospective client to invest with them, or they're trying to persuade and influence the consumer to use their brand and not another brand. And how you position that verbally or sometimes in writing is everything. If yep. you're extremely good in the art of communication, you have that power to persuade people to do what you want them to do. So it's not to be underestimated. There are lots of brilliant people in business who don't have that skill and are left wondering why, what's missing from the formula. I've thought every variable here through 50 million times and it's not working. And communication ultimately winds up being one of the most critical components.
Absolutely. And perhaps one of the most difficult issues an executive might face is a crisis, whether it's a claim of a hostile work environment, a lawsuit that puts the company's image at risk, an accident at a factory, or some sort of financial impropriety like we've been seeing with the banks out in Silicon Valley. Is there a formula or steps executives can take to manage reputational damage?
There's such a scarcity of apology in our society today.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think it's seen as almost a sign of weakness now.
Uh-huh.
And you see this from political leaders on down. No one apologizes for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel as though the sound of an apology has become so foreign to people that it winds up being this welcome development. And I think that if you're a leader and something has gone wrong, you need to own it. And you need to own it with conviction. Was this our finest moment? Absolutely not. Is this abhorrent to everything we stand for? Absolutely. Here's what I've already put in place to make sure something like this never happens again.
Yeah.
You know, instead of trying to weasel around it and, you know, slip off the hook in a squirrely way.
Oh, and you'll be found out in a minute, too.
Yeah, and then all you do is you create this slow drip, this slow bleed, where now a week later something comes out that you didn't reveal. And better to have the one purge of bad stuff and get it behind you instead of constantly having, you know, around the next bend, another revelation that's damaging.
Well, probably both of our mothers told us honesty is the best policy.
That's right.
Because you'll get caught, you'll get tripped up in a lie. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. Mm-hmm.
And that's something we always tell clients, probably first in every training session, the truth is non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. That is the starting line of every, certainly of every crisis media training. Because you can be forgiven for a lot of things, but you can't be forgiven for playing fast and loose with the facts when something's gone wrong.
And when you get caught with that lie, it sticks with you for a long time. You know, there are times, Bill, and we've both been journalists, and sometimes we can get a little hostile, a little caustic with the person we're trying to interview, and become a little confrontational.
Really?
You know, we'll ask questions over and over and over again because we want to hear a certain answer.
Yeah.
Now, what advice do you have for an executive dealing with a circumstance like that? How should they handle it?
I often tell executives, the more hardball the journalist becomes, the brighter I want your demeanor and facial expressiveness. I don't want you looking like you've just been slugged in the ribs. There's something very disarming about looking unflappable in the face of, it's very hard to do, but it definitely makes a perception difference.
Put that game,
watching the interview,
put that game face on and that's right.
It almost says, you've played right into my hands with this line of questioning. You know, it definitely does not allow the interviewer to gain as much of an upper hand. than if you start scowling and wincing and shifting in your seat and looking like you're ready to lunge and choke them. Which right. You and I have both had practically happened to us.
Well, speaking of nerves, because, you know, listen, being confronted by a journalist when a camera is rolling, there's a mic in front of you, is a nerve-wracking experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of executives that I've trained and worked around, they say that you know, their nerves sometimes rattle them, that they don't know what to say. They don't know how to get going. And, you know, I saw this TV interview, it was just a few months ago, with Frank Sinatra, the chairman of the board.
Mm-hmm.
I considered him the absolute coolest cucumber around, but he discussed how nervous he was before he performed. I would have never guessed that in a million years. Mm-hmm. Are there some techniques presenters can employ to calm themselves down, kind of center themselves before they do an interview?
Ironically, a lot of it is exactly the same advice in dealing with the hostile journalist. A smile is the biggest smokescreen to your nerves there is, because people who are nervous cannot muster it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Sinatra, what was the ultimate what ultimately convinced people he wasn't nervous was this display of sheer joy for what he loves to do.
Yes, yes.
And I think that is what made it inconceivable to people that he could be nervous. Well, how can a guy who looks like he's enjoying himself so much be nervous? And that gets back to what's very important in a business presentation. And that's energy. And we define energy as your palpable enthusiasm for the value of what you have to tell the audience.
Yep.
You have to lead by example and look like, hey, I find this stuff fascinating. I think this stuff is important. I know the 10 minutes you're sitting here listening to me are probably going to be the most important and valuable 10 minutes of your week. You know, you have to psych yourself up to think that. Most people go into a presentation with a defeatist attitude and a little evil voice on their shoulder that says they're really bored. They're already daydreaming about lunch. They can't wait for this to be over.
Yeah.
And that defeatist voice sets us on this spiraling down course where we start speeding up.
Yep.
We start losing our way. We start apologizing for taking too long. And then it's all the wheels come off.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, Bill, it kind of dovetails into, you know, what if you get lost in your thoughts when mm-hmm. you're presenting? And that's really easy to do. We've all had those moments. You forget where you're going. How do you deal with that? Is there an approach to use so that you can get out of that hole? You can dig yourself out of the hole.
So let's say I was giving a presentation. And it was on this general subject, Jim. And I was on some very granular part of the presentation. And then I just had brain lock. And then I felt myself in free fall.
Right.
Go back to the main thesis point, where if you get stuck, you can just interrupt yourself and say, listen, more than anything, it comes down to the most important thing to remember, and that is be memorable. Say right. something that's got some lasting value. Go back to the critical, bring it all home point, and then see if you can build back out from that main thesis point.
So what you're saying is circle back to that main key message that you were trying to get out in the very beginning of the presentation. Then you'll find that thought again as you go.
Yes, I think you will. Most people are better able to recover off of a very high altitude thought, as opposed to, ooh, this is point six of point 10 in this very granular part of the discussion. And that's where we tend to get lost a little bit. But the most important thing you can do to get yourself a little insurance policy for not having that meltdown moment is when you're rehearsing, don't ever throw in the towel and say, oh, let me start over.
Right.
You know, people make a mistake when they rehearse out loud. Hopefully they are rehearsing out loud. What you do is you deprive yourself of honing that muscle that you need to pull yourself out of the death dive, you know, to get the thing back on the rails.
Get back
on track.
If you're
never doing it in rehearsal, you're never going to be able to do it live in front of an audience.
Yeah. You know, when I first came to New York, I went to work for WABC TV, right, number one station in America. And I thought I think I have a pretty good broadcast voice. All right.
You have the pipes, Jim. You have the pipes. All of the rest of us envy.
You know, management thought that I did too. But you know, the first thing they did, they sent me to a voice coach.
Because that's what TV news executives do, Jim.
Right? But in Pitch Perfect, you know, you talk about using your voice as an instrument, that pace, pitch, and projection are essential. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's why they sent me. I had a good voice. I just didn't know how to use it properly.
Yeah.
What would you suggest to the executives out there? I mean, because, you know, a lot of them kind of drone on sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That staying in a cruise control mode is a quick way to get your audience drifting. And by cruise control, I mean all of my words come out at the same pace, and there's no variation in the pace to this. I'm never going to slow down and I'm never going to speed up. It's all going to be the same. And that becomes very difficult to listen to. It also becomes very difficult to pull key information out of there. I like it when executives embrace the idea that, yeah, I'm going to have sections where I'm nice and brisk and conversational, but then when I get to the big point, I'm going to slow down. I'm going to say it more emphatically.
Mm-hmm,
realizing that fast and slow and a mix of the two makes for really effective communication.
Right.
And then realizing what's the underlying emotion behind this section of what I'm saying to this group of people.
Mm-hmm,
Am I talking about something hopeful, something positive?
Yeah.
You know, let that tone of optimism come in the pitch of your voice, because pitch provides the context through which people understand the words we're saying.
You know, I find that so many people tail off at the end of a sentence, and they kind of, rather than emphasizing and being exuberant about what they're saying, they just kind of tail off. You know, there are some studies also that indicate that, you know, it's not so much of what you say to the audience, but how you say it that counts. That the audience is watching every single move that you make, your facial expressions, the way you move your body, and of course the way you use your voice, we just discussed.
Right.
You put the whole package together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make it really work.
Yeah. Just for instance, you see people moving if they're up on a stage or a riser in front of people. You know, I've had people say, "Yo, I'm really good about moving around the room," and then you see them up in the front, and they look like the lion in the cage at the zoo. You know, they're just pacing back and forth; they never stop. So, random movement is not good. In fact, that becomes very distracting. Or just having one gesticulation with your hands that you do over and over and over again, and you're punching the air in a repetitive way. What we're trying to do is always eliminate distraction. And watching somebody pace on a stage is distraction. Watching somebody using their hands like they're chopping vegetables over and over again, that's a distraction. So helping them come up with a very organic looking way of moving around. So for instance, you walk a stage.
Yep.
Walk, you know, initiate the move from one place to another in transitional thought, not in the middle of a really important point. Before you get to the really important point, come to a stop and stay in one stationary position. So there are a whole host of strategies around what to do, moving with your hands, with your facial expressions.
It just seems to me that the more natural you are,
better
you're going to come off. The more the audience is going to relate to you. You know, one thing, unfortunately, time slips by, Bill. I'd like to touch on one thing, though. is the virtual interview, because since the pandemic hit a few years ago, we've seen business transition to holding virtual meetings via Zoom, Google, WebEx. Everything that we've discussed previously, does it hold true for a virtual interview or a meeting? Do you have any suggestions for what makes a good virtual interview?
Eye contact is a harder thing to achieve on virtual because a lot of people are just not sure where to look. You naturally tend to look either at yourself or the person you're talking to. And in Zoom, the default setting for those windows is vertically down the right side of your screen. Yeah. So your eyes are drawn far away from where you should be looking, and that's into your webcam. There is a way on Zoom to click and drag that chain of thumbnail images so they flatten out horizontally at the top of your screen.
Right.
And what that'll do is that'll get your eyes right where they need to be to make what's considered virtual eye contact.
Or even you could put some post-its around the camera itself so that you keep to your main points.
Yeah, that's great. You know, what's really interesting, I've found a lot of people now, because they're weaning themselves off of virtual, are the notes they were using as crutches, they're missing them terribly now, you know, in-person presentations.
Yeah. You know, as I said, we're running out of time, but, you know, I want to revisit this discussion in the future because we're going to be going through a constant shift in how we communicate, methods, techniques to stay on top of the game. And I think the next time we discuss communications, which I hope is not too far down the road, artificial intelligence.
Wow. It's a game changer in everything.
I don't even get it.
Yeah.
And I probably won't for a while, but technologies like ChatGPT and Bard from Google, I mean, they are really going to come into play. And if you don't understand how to utilize these new technologies, you are regressing.
Yes, you absolutely are.
And let's look into that, and we'll talk about that.
That'd be fun. Yeah. I'd love to talk about that.
Hey, listen, Bill, thanks so much for taking time with us.
Jim, great spending some time with you. I really enjoyed our chat.
Yes. And that was Bill McGowan, the founder and CEO of Clarity Media Group in New York City, and offices in Silicon Valley and in Hong Kong and Singapore. He's also the author of Pitch Perfect, How to Say It Right the First Time, Every Time. I'm Jim Paymar, and you have been listening to The Big Shift, available wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening today, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Big Shift, coming soon. Stay tuned.